everyone, and welcome to the latest Eagle Eye podcast with Ruben Frank. I'm Dave Zangaro. Rube, how you doing?
Doing well, Dave. How's it going?
It's going. It was really exciting this week. We got a chance to talk to all the Eagles position coaches, some of them for the very first time. So
most of them, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, only a couple holdovers from the previous staff. So it was exciting. It was a good chance to finally talk to some of those people and try to figure out Nick Sirianni's staff a little bit more.
Yeah, and I felt like, you know, when I look back on all those interviews and you know, we talked to like eight or nine guys, the answers to their questions were interesting in some cases and important and newsworthy, and we'll be writing that stuff. But I think that for me, the real value was just kind of getting to know them and just hearing them talk about football. And, you know, you look for common threads in the whole group. And you know, we've talked a lot about how it's a young group. There's a ton of energy. It's not just Nick. I mean, they all, you know, they're all just like brimming with energy, just in their interviews, just talking to us and just really into it and into talking football. And it was interesting to get that glimpse just of their personalities. Most of them were really, you know, they spoke at length and they answered the questions in detail as much as they could. I'll tell people, you know, if the videos are all up on the Eagles YouTube channel. I mean, I would, if you're a hardcore Eagles fan, watch these guys, get to know them. I mean, they're going to be the staff of this football team before you would think for a few years, there'll be guys coming and going, but it really gives you a good glimpse into their personalities, how they view the game, how they view their jobs. You know, a couple of them were a little more reserved than others, but I found it really revealing and valuable and fun just getting to know them.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Yeah, absolutely. And we figured today what we would do is just kind of go through a bunch of our biggest takeaways from talking to these people, because this time is so different. You know, the last time we had a coaching split, there were so many coaches that were holdovers. You know, there was a really big group, a surprising number of coaches that stayed on for Doug Peterson's staff, only a couple with the Eagles. But it's funny because that's where we're going to start. And really, two of the more interesting guys to talk to this week were the two holdovers, Aaron Moorhead and Jeff Statland. But I think there's so much intrigue around the receiver position. We wanted to start with Moorhead today. I liked a lot of what he said. And, you know, it's funny, the biggest thing and one of the biggest questions about the Eagles receivers isn't about Jalen Reagor or Devontae Smith, their two first-round picks. It's about Travis Fulgham because of the crazy season he had last year. You know, the 5-game stretch that was magical and then him kind of falling off the face of the earth.
Yeah, and he was pretty blunt about what happened with Travis Fulgham, where I think Doug Peterson kind of hinted at issues, at various issues, and it was clear that he was in the doghouse. And I thought that the most important thing was Aaron kind of separating Alshon's return to Travis Fulgham's decline, because there was no cause and effect there. I mean, Travis Fulgham was 3 games into his decline when Alshon started getting more snaps. And he played like 5-1 game, I think 18-1 game, but he wasn't a big part of the offense. Travis Fulgham was already struggling when Alshon started playing more. It was almost like, you know, they felt like, and he said this, he said, the best guys are going to play no matter what, how old they are, what their contract status is. And at that point, Alshon was a better target for a young quarterback. So, or at the end of the other quarterback's run, but, you know, he basically said he lost some confidence. He had some injuries that he was trying to fight through. But he kept emphasizing, you know, he's got to work through those things. And, but he seems to really, really like his talent, which how can you not after those, that 5-game stretch? And I looked it up. It's the most yards. And man, when Stathead has that span finder, it'll be a lot easier to do this, because to find the top 5-game spans right now, you have to go 1 through 5, 2 through 6, 3 through 7, et cetera. But once there's a span finder, which they already have in baseball and it's coming in football, you'll be able to just put in 5-game span and you'll get the top guys. So I'm sure people care about that. But I mean, it was a top 5-game span by a young receiver under 25 or under since Fred Barnett in 1990, his rookie year. So kind of puts it into context of how good he was during that stretch. And those of us who watched him, that was not a fluke. I mean, he was playing physical. He was aggressive. He was high pointing the ball. You know, he was using his big frame against cornerbacks, and then he just lost it. But it's there somewhere. And, you know, Moorhead said, my job's to get him to play consistently and to, you know, what we saw those 5 games to get out of him consistently.
Yeah. You know, the fluke question was one that we asked a bunch during the season last year. And I think I even asked the previous quarterback about that. And he said, look, like one game, maybe like you can have one good game, but to do it for a month, it's hard to imagine that being a fluke. So yeah, I still don't know what they have there. I think there's talent, and a lot of it's on Moorhead to bring it out of him. You know, if there were questions about how he dealt with the added focus from other teams, and if there were questions, you know, I know he had some injury problems. I think he had a surgery after the season. So I guess all of that kind of put together is what led to him struggling. But, you know, in this offense, so much of the attention is going to go to Devontae Smith. It's going to go to Dallas Goedert. It might even go to Jalen Reagor. So if you have Travis Fulgham out there as the third option, that might help him. I mean, that might help him take some of the focus off of him and be able to win one-on-ones.
Yeah. I mean, he was the number one option last year during that stretch. And
He was the only option.
It's incredible. He had more yards during those 5 weeks than any other wide receiver had all year, which is hard to believe, but that's how last year went. And he even said, Aaron Moorhead said, you know, if he can be what we saw last year, we have a really good wide receiver group. And I think he's really the key to it in a lot of ways. Cause I think we know what Devontae Smith is. And we'll see what, you know, how much Jalen Reagor progresses from last year. I would hope it would be significant. But if their third option is a guy who can do what Travis Fulgham did, and it doesn't have to be 152 yards like he had against, what was it, Pittsburgh or whatever, but just be a functional, solid, good wide receiver, you know, get 6 for 70. If he can be that kind of guy, and you know, then you're looking at maybe we have a pretty legitimate 1 through 3, and then you throw Greg Ward in there, who you know is a reliable, solid slot, and whatever else you get from the younger guys. But Aaron, where there's a real sense in him that if Fulgham is what he was for that little stretch, then they're really good at wide receiver.
Yeah, and he talked about the other receivers too. You know, it's funny, we've talked about Jeff Stoutland coming back and how big it is for the offensive line, but having Aaron Moorhead for a second year for a guy like Jalen Reagor could be a big deal. And I know maybe people are going to think, well, maybe that's not a good thing because he didn't obviously have a good rookie year, but this is a position coach he trusts. He's known for a really long time. There was a connection there immediately because of, you know, he played with his father, Monte. So I think that it's a good thing that Moorhead's back for Jalen Reagor, because if there's anyone who can get something out of him, I would think it would be Aaron Moorhead.
Yeah, and it's an interesting question, because I think for some of these guys, it's probably good to have new coaches. I think for the wide receivers, it's such a young group. And going from year one to year two is always such a big – it's a crucial year. So to have that familiarity to have that same voice. I think it's big for those guys.
Yeah, Moorhead said he's like, you know, the biggest jump for a lot of players is year one, year two to year three. And he's like, look around. Like, this is what my room is. Yeah.
Yeah. Greg Ward's the oldest guy at 25. So it is it's a young group. It was kind of like 2016. It was the same way. I think the oldest guy was probably, it might have been Paul Turner. I don't know. But it was, they didn't have anyone over 25 that year either. But yeah, so I was impressed with, I've always been impressed with Aaron Moorhead. I'm glad they kept him. I think he knows his stuff, and I think he's a good coach. I think last year, it's easy to say, you know, the receivers sucked last year. He's a bad coach. But, with what he had to work with and the situation, thought he did his best. But it's a big year for him, too, and we'll see. I mean, these guys have to – obviously, Devontae has to be what they think he is, and these other young kids have to develop.
It's a heck of a vote of confidence, though, from a head coach with a receiver background to keep – the incumbent receivers coach, because he knows that world. I mean, he could have gotten a guy that he knows a lot better to come in and coach receivers. And the fact that he didn't, I think kind of speaks volumes to Moorhead. And I'm guessing he really liked what he had to say in the interview process. He probably really liked his evaluation of the talent that was already on the roster. But I don't think that should be overlooked. And it was one question I wanted to ask Moorhead. I didn't get another one, was what it's like having a head coach who has that background with receivers, you know, because we saw even in just the two practices that were open, we saw Sirianni with the receivers so much, and it takes kind of there's a balance there. You know, if you're a position coach, because it's your position, you want to do what you want to do. But then the head coach obviously has had success in this league at your position. He knows what he's talking about. I wonder how many conversations they've had about how that's going to work.
Yeah, and I mean the key there is that they're speaking the same language, and they might be hearing stuff from two different people, but it's the same. You know, there's a common thread there, and they're not contradicting each other. They seem to be on the same page. I'm sure the players spoke highly of Aaron when Nick talked to them during that whole hiring process when he was putting the staff together, because they really seem to like him. They really seem to believe that he can help them get better. We'll see how that goes. It's not an easy job. I mean, there's a lot of question marks on that, in that room, to use your favorite word. Be interesting to watch.
Anything else from Moorhead kind of stick out to you? He was obviously very effusive in his praise of Devontae Smith.
Yeah. And he's high on Jalen. I like the fact that he just came out and admitted, you know, that really the key for the key for us is Fulgham, because we kind of know what everyone else is, what we think they can be, what roles they'll be in. He's just a big giant question mark. They have no idea. I mean, he could be practice squad to star. He could be anything in between. So he's the key to everything. And I like the fact that Moorhead didn't shy away from that. He said, you know, he can really make us good.
The one other little note, he did admit that they've been moving J-Jaw inside a little bit. He said, you know, most of the guys have inside outside flexibility aside from like Greg Ward, who just has that prototypical slot receiver body type. But the thought of, I saw it at practice too, J-Jaw inside, I get it because you're just trying to get something out of him at this point. But isn't that like, look, I know he has body control. That was at least one of the things he had coming out of college, but wasn't his strength like the 50-50 balls and winning on the outside? Like,
I think when he said they're going to try J-Jaw inside, I think they meant he meant stay inside the building during practice.
Not right.
That was terrible. I think what you said first is probably the case. They're just trying to get anything out of him at this point. I think that's what it is.
It was funny at the link on their final practice, J-Jaw in the back of the end zone, like rose up and made this great catch. And I just looked at the person next to me and smiled and said, summer of J-Jaw again. Here we go.
Yeah. He can,
because that's the thing, because he's looked good before, and you feel like you've been tricked before by him. So I don't know if there's anything he can do this summer that's going to convince people he can play.
Yeah, I think it would have to be a for him to make the team, it would have to be a combination of him having a great camp and maybe a couple of injuries, or somebody having a really bad camp. It's a real long shot. I'm crazy. I still think he can play in the league. I think it's going to have to be somewhere else. Yeah. He's got the individual things. I mean, he just hasn't been able to put it together. I think he's one of those guys that might just need a fresh start somewhere else.
Yeah, that's possible. It's kind of a tricky thing to figure out why he just hasn't. And the other thing is, you know, he doesn't play special teams. And when you're trying to keep a bottom of the roster receiver, if they don't play special teams, like, well, good is he? Even if Fulgham, I mean, Fulgham ended up playing some gunner last year. He was pretty good. So even if Fulgham's not what we thought he was as a receiver, at least he brings some value. Whereas, you know, a guy like J.J., maybe he'll learn to play special teams. But if he doesn't.
Fulgham actually ended up playing some special teams late in the year, which I thought was impressive because he wasn't early in the year, if I remember. And then the last thing from Moorhead, he did mention that he liked the way Fulgham fought through whatever he was going through. Like the last 3 weeks, I mean, he wasn't putting up big numbers, but he did get back in the mix a little bit more. He caught some, I think he had 4 or 5 catches of 10 yards or more over the last 3 games, mainly with Jalen. So he finished, I don't want to say he finished strong, but he did kind of fight through it. And I think he caught a 15-yarder from Greg Ward, actually. Mm-hmm. I think it was on the receiving end of Greg Ward's only completion of his career so far. So he kind of made sure that he mentioned that he did fight through it and come out the other end a little bit, you know, and help the team a little bit.
And that was good to see too, because that was with Jalen, like you mentioned, right? Because his previous success, I mean, most of the, I think all of that 5-game stretch, right?
Don't say it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
we talked to Denard Wilson. I'll just move on before I say it. We talked to Denard Wilson. First time talking to him, new defensive backs coach. He's got a heavy lift here. They have some safeties, I guess, in Anthony Harris and Rodney McLeod when he's healthy. But aside from those two players and Darius Slay at the CB1 position, there's a lot of question marks, you know? And the biggest one is the second cornerback. I don't know who it's going to be. I don't think they know who it's going to be either.
Yeah, and it's still possible it's somebody who's not on the roster right now. That's a possibility. He talked about what he's going to be looking for and how let them all fight it out. I mean, he seems to think there's talent in that group. I have a feeling it's not going to be Avante. And, you know, at the end of his interview, he mentioned some guys that are going to fight it out. And he didn't mention Avante, and he had talked about him earlier. So it could have just been, he was just throwing out some names. Isaiah Scott and Michael Jaquette and the rookie McPherson, a few guys like that. I just have a feeling they're gonna. I think they understand that Avante would just be a Band-Aid anyway. So, he's not an outside cornerback. So see what they have in the other guys. I mean, you could always go back to him if you have to, but I think they're gonna hope that one of the other guys separates himself. I think.
Yeah, in the last practice of the spring, we saw they were only a nickel, and they're going on air, but Jaquette was the outside corner, and Avante was in the nickel corner spot. Craig James wasn't there, though. Craig James wasn't at that practice, so I don't know where
he mentioned Craig James' name, too.
Yeah, I don't know where he stacks up. We think of Craig James as a special teamer, but they might view him differently, you know, especially in the situation they're in. It'll be interesting to see what happens there if they don't bring someone in. Like you mentioned, it's still a possibility they bring someone in, but man, if they don't, I still think Avante has to be the front runner.
Yeah. Just based on experience. I mean, Jaquette's played in 3 games at the end of last year. It was very up and down. Craig James has played 86 or 88 career snaps in 3 years on defense. Obviously the other two guys, Isaiah played in Jacksonville, I guess, a little bit.
Josiah.
I'm sorry. I knew it was wrong. I was hoping you wouldn't correct me in front of everybody.
I didn't do it the first time. Give me credit for that.
I knew it was wrong. Anyway, the last four letters are the same. But the point is they don't have much experience at all there, but I think
he's so small. I mean, he's Avante size.
Yeah. I would think he's a slot if anything also. And I mean, if you just go by traits and size, I mean, Jacquet would make sense. I just don't think I don't know. He's physical, efforts there. I don't know if he can run with these guys. We'll see.
Yeah, he has the length. If McPherson was like an inch or two taller, you'd feel a lot better about him being on the outside. It's a shame because, you know, it was funny. Even when I talked to Rex Ryan for that Hula Bowl story, that's the one thing he said. He's like, you just wish he was a little bit taller because he has the traits to be an outside corner, but not the prototypical length.
That's why I was drafted where I was drafted. So, I mean, there's each one of these guys has something going for him and a lot of not going for him. So my best guess is still the starter will be a guy that's not here yet. They don't have a lot of resources to, you know, unless it's part of a Zach Ertz trade, which would not surprise me. But now you got to find a team that's got a surplus of cornerbacks and needs a tight end. It's not the easiest thing to do. So it's an issue. And, you know, we'll – the one thing he said is like he came in Denard Wilson and he watched film of all these guys, but I mean he's a really positive guy and he's kind of looking at that whole group as, you know, fight it out, let's see what we have, instead of looking at them like, you haven't done this, you don't have any experience. I mean, they're, you know, I don't know if that's good or bad, but he's kind of going in with a fresh look, fresh eyes at all these guys. So we'll see how it sorts out.
Yeah, the one interesting note, and this is not about the position right now, but he has some weird familiarity and weird ties with this team because he coached Rodney McLeod in high school. Then he coached Rodney with the Rams. I was about to say Los Angeles, but they were still St. Louis.
Right? Still
in St. Louis when he coached them there. Rodney's old. No, I'm joking. But so he knows Rodney McLeod really well. And he was teammates with one of the many McPhersons who came before Zach in that DeMatha, Maryland area. It's interesting that he has these ties to these guys.
Yeah, and he said he didn't realize, I guess, pre-draft watching film, he didn't realize that this McPherson was related to the other ones because there's like, what, eight of them?
I think there's eight of them.
And he said, but his mannerisms, just the way he played, remind me of his older brothers. I was like, oh wait, McPherson, yeah, that's how you realize. But yeah, he's an interesting one because ideally, yeah, you'd like a little more frame. But I mean, he mentioned them certainly in that whole mix of guys that is going to compete for playing time at outside corner. So I feel like I just feel like the guy that's going to be the starter isn't here. And I don't think it's going to be Avante. I think they understand that's just not his strength.
Yeah. So. I think they knew it last year too, but they didn't have anyone else and they still don't have anyone else.
Yeah.
I have a good tidbit about Wilson. He's the reason Rodney McLeod wears 23.
Is that right?
Because not like because he wanted to be like him, but he was in with the Rams and Rodney was an undrafted rookie and he had some like awful number that, you know, that they give an undrafted rookie and he makes the team. And Denard went to him and was like, you got to change that number right now. And Rodney said he had no idea that you could even do that. So, without Wilson, Rodney be wearing like, you know, some ugly like 46 or something.
You hate those safety numbers in the 40s.
Yeah.
It really is a number in the 40s good for anyone? Maybe like a fullback. If you have a fullback, it's kind of a slow lumbering, you know, Keith Byers, 41, slow lumbering.
Yeah.
Number. Yeah. It's not a quick number.
I mean, Darby won a Super Bowl in 41 and still changed it. So it kind of tells you what they think about the numbers in the 40s.
Yeah. Anything else from Denard Wilson?
I don't think so. You good on Denard?
Yeah, good on Denard.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Let's get to Stout, because one of my favorite things in the world is talking to Jeff Stoutland about offensive line play. And one of his favorite things in the world to do is talk about offensive line play. We talk about all these young guys having energy. None of them have the energy of Jeff Stoutland.
He's unbelievable. And it was almost like he was interviewing himself. like we would throw out a question and he would start out answering it and he'd be illuminating. And then he would raise another question and start answering that. And then that would lead
to something. And he would acknowledge that that was not your question. And he's right. Like, I know what I'm doing, but I want to talk about this now.
Yeah, that wasn't your question, but I still want to talk about Sua. I still want to talk about Nate Herbig. And at the end, I think he said, you guys didn't ask about Nate Herbig. Let me talk about him a little bit. It's just, he was making up the questions. He was going, and his answers are, I mean, I don't think any coach is as honest as him. I mean, he's going to tell you when a guy has something he needs to work on, when a guy didn't play well, when a guy is struggling. I mean, he's as honest as they come. And he's hard ass. I mean, he's tough on these guys. And you got to have a certain mindset to flourish under Jeff Stoutland, because he's going to, you know, he's not going to give you a whole lot of positive reinforcement. You gotta find it inside yourself, but he will teach you and he'll get the most out of you. And the older guys swear by him, veterans, and the young guys probably hate him at first, but realize eventually that he's good for them. But he was, you know, how long did we talk to him? Like 2 hours?
it felt like it, yeah.
Just went on and on. But anything jump out at you specifically?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he admitted there's a left tackle competition, and he says that neither guy is ahead of the other one. It's Andre Dillard and Jordan Mailata. They're on even ground. And now we'll see when training camp comes, someone has to be with the first team first, right? Like it has to be either Dillard or Mailata. But it's funny too, because he said, you know, it'll be up to the head coach to make that decision. I'll have input. I'm pretty sure, you know, Nick Sirianni is going to listen to Jeff Stoutland and play whoever he wants there. You know, I know that ultimately it's head coach's decision, but this is going to be Stout's decision, I think.
Yeah. And what I thought he was going to say was Jordan and Andre are going to decide that. Like, we'll know at the end of training camp and the preseason games, we'll know. I think the decision will make itself. Like, I don't think.
I mean, the best case scenario is it doesn't, and they're both really good.
That's the best case scenario. I have a hunch that won't be the case, but yeah, it could be. I feel like we'll know at the end of camp who's been better. And I don't think it's a slam dunk that it's Jordan Mailata. He did play well last year, but I mean, everything we hear about Dillard from Dillard, and he's got to stay healthy again. I mean, that's obviously like anybody, but he can't suffer a season ending injury in the first week of August. But everything you hear is just how much farther along he is and how he's finally grown into the role, and he's confident and he's powerful and strong and his technique is there. And, you know, he talked about how Dillard came to every meeting while he was hurt during the whole year, sat in the front row, took notes, how he was just involved and engaged in everything. And does that make him a better player? Yeah, probably does. I think mainly it shows his commitment and his desire, and kind of reflects what Andre was saying last week about, you know, I'm a new man, and I realize how much I love playing football and how this is really what I want to do. I mean, if you're out for the year and you sit in the front row at every meeting taking notes, I mean, that tells me a lot, and that shows me a lot. And Stout said, look, if you're going to do this, if you're going to be in the meetings, I'm going to call on you. I'm going to ask you questions. We're going to act like you're playing, and we're going to get you ready every week. So mentally he was there, and that's, I think that's pretty revealing about Andre Dillard.
Yeah. The one thing I asked Stout about, like, what do you want from the guy who wins the job? And he mentioned how the other four starters, Samalu, Kelsey, Brooks, and Lane, how they're kind of playing in concert with each other. There's, you know, he talked about synchronization. And then a little bit later during his talk, he talked about how good Dillard and Samalu look together. Now, that's not to say Mailata and Samalu don't look good together, but that was a little hint that, like, hey, if this is what he wants and Dillard is starting to show him this, there's still a chance that I think a lot of fans are assuming this is Jordan Mailata's job, and I really don't think that's the case. I think it is truly a competition.
Yeah. I think Dillard's going to win it. I do. Just a hunch. And I think a lot of things, I mean, the fact that Jordan can back up both sides shouldn't be a factor, but I think it could be, if it could be a tiebreaker. But maybe I'm just buying in too much to the whole Andre Dillard new man thing, but and again, it's not a knock on Jordan Mailata. I think he's shown that he's a capable left tackle, but drafted him in the first round for a reason. Like you said the other day, I think he's going to win it. We'll see.
It's tough too, because whoever wins this job, and I've looked at it this way before, you might not just be winning it now. Like, you might be winning the job for the long term. Now, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see too. Like, say Dillard wins the job, and he's not looking good in week two. Like, how long is the rope? Because you know you have another competent option. But you would think you wouldn't want either player looking over their shoulder once the season begins. You want them to be fully engaged and just focused on themselves. But there's a lot of different angles to this, because also, like, who has more upside? I can argue that Jordan Mailata has more upside. Andre Dillard's been playing football for a lot longer. And if they're even right now, Jordan, he could still be getting better. Like, he could still be getting better for a few years.
Yep.
That's the tough part.
I mean, Dillard seems to think he's getting better too. I mean, he's 25, right?
Yeah.
And Jordan's 23, I think. Mm-hmm. So just age-wise, you would think, you know, a 23-year-old's got more room to grow as a player. But I think I think Dillard's an unusual case, just because he missed the year. I mean, we haven't seen a play left tackle since, you know, a month into the 2019 season. So we really don't know what we're going to expect, what we're going to get once camp starts. But he has upside too. There's just not as much. Yeah.
That's true. It's going to be fascinating. I can't wait to see. All eyes are going to be on the left tackle spot in training camp.
Left tackle, Devontae, and CB2. Yeah.
Yeah, and the quarterback, as always.
Yeah, that's always.
Anything else from Stout? He mentioned how, I had some people react to this, like, well, what else is he going to say? But you have to understand Stout. When he was asked about Brandon Brooks and Lane Johnson, I mean, he went overboard about how good they look in the spring. And that's, Jeff Stoutland doesn't do that unless he believes it.
He even said that.
Yeah, he did say that, but he's right. Like, he's not someone who just, like, throws praise out. He's done it a lot in the last few years with some of these guys because they're some of the best in the league. But, I mean, if he says Brandon Brooks and Lane Johnson look great in spring, and he even said, look, like, it's, I know that they're not playing football yet, but they look so strong and so powerful, you believe him. Now, I don't think that's the question. The question is whether those guys stay healthy.
And he even said with Brooks, at least, he said, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what to expect from him. Yeah. He's like blown off the ball. I couldn't believe it. I mean, he's painfully honest to a fault. And some coaches, if they say something like that, oh, this guy looks great, you take it with a grain of salt. When Stout says it, because if a guy looks terrible, he'll say that too. You know, yeah. he won't hesitate. He'll be like, yeah, he's having a hard time right now. We can all see it. You know, you see him giving up sack after sack. He'll tell you. He'll shoot you straight, Dave, as Big Red says.
He will. And you know, Stoutland was also asked about him just being back because there were the rumors about him going back to Alabama. He shot some of them down, but he also said if he ever were to go back to college, it would be at Alabama. I thought that was interesting, because he likes being at the highest level. He feels like he's at the highest level in the NFL. I don't think he could go back to, like, you know, wherever else in college. I think if he went back to college, it would be at a program like that.
Yeah, and he's been here a long time. Was
13.
Here since 13, right?
Yeah, he came in with Chip.
He was an original Chip hire in 2013. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was his ninth.
He's become one of the best position coaches in Eagles history.
Yeah, I think he was on my list. The top 10 assistant coaches in Eagles history. He was on there. I also did 10 worst, also known as the Dana Bible list. That was fun to do. That was about a year ago. I did
not
that,
for Dana Bible. It wasn't.
No, but I think he knows. But anyway, yeah, it's always fun talking to Stan. I wish we could talk to these guys more. You know, we don't get a lot of time with them. Although I think Nick seems to be more apt to allow them to talk than maybe some of the other coaches we've had.
Yeah, they'll beat that out of him pretty soon.
Yeah, probably.
One of my favorite Stout things, and I just wanted to mention this, it's always fun when he gets new players, because especially when the games roll around, because Stout goes so hard at them during the week. He's just kind of miserable during the week. Like it's you're doing this wrong, you're doing this wrong. And then when the game comes, he's just incredibly, he like flips, and he's just incredibly positive and reinforces everything. I remember talking to Jordan Mailata after his first game, and he's like, was that the same guy? Because Stout's whole mindset is like, I do all that during the week to get you ready. By Sunday, if you're not ready, you're not ready, but I'm going to support you on Sunday and try to be positive. And the new players don't know that. So it's always fun to talk to them after their first game. And like, what do you think of Stout on Sunday or on Thursday in the preseason? And it's always like, that was weird, right? Like, it's that every time. I'm like, yeah, that's every game.
Yeah.
It's always fun.
Interesting guy. He's a lot of fun.
He is. Let's move on. We talked to Jamal Singleton, who has a really – he's in a tricky spot. He's replacing another really all-time great position coach and a guy who – people love in that building. They still love. I was about to say loved, but they still love Deuce in that building. I appreciate Singleton's approach to this. He said, you know, I'm just working to earn their trust. I want to show these players that I can help them get better, and I want to do that with facts. I want to show them film and say, hey, I think you do this really well. I see this area, and I think I can help you get better in this area. And it's kind of like a pragmatic approach to it. And I think that's smart, because – you can't come in here and like Miles Sanders called Deuce Staley a father figure. You're not going to be that for these guys, or at least for him. So you come in and you say, this is what I'm going to do, and this is how I'm going to help you. And I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I do too. And you have to understand the relationship these guys had with Deuce. Now, I mean, Gainwell and you know, Kerryon Johnson weren't here. So that's kind of probably a little different relationship. You know, but for Miles especially, and, you know, Jordan Howard was here under Deuce. Boston Scott was here under Deuce. You can't come in and try to replace. You can't come in and just try to be what Deuce was. It would fail miserably. So it does make a lot of sense, and focus on the technician, and, you know, focus on the nuts and bolts of getting better as a player. And he was honest about Miles. I mean, he talked about Miles needs to be more consistent and get better. And I like hearing that. I don't want a coach to come in and say, you know, Miles is really good. He's done this, 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 and this, and led the league in this or whatever, this many scrimmages. I mean, he's like, yeah, he's got to get better. So I like hearing that. I'm sure Miles likes hearing that too.
Yeah, Miles has always been pretty accountable. Like, he'll admit, like, I need to work on this. I'm not good enough at this. He's just got to fix it. And I like both of their approaches. What did you make of Singleton talking about the rotation?
My laptop was muted at that point, so I have not heard that.
Oh, okay. Well, he talked about...
you were supposed to tell me when he started, remember?
Well, I
because I was transcribing Moorhead at that point.
They sent us a text that they were starting, so I figured you knew. All right. Well, Singleton talked about the rotation, and he said, it's not a matter of, like, we need X amount of guys in the rotation. It's more a matter of we need the skill sets. We need someone who can run, you know, through the tackles. We need someone who can pass catch. We need someone who can pass protect. We need guys who can do all these different things. And he's like, I don't care how many people it takes to get those skill sets. I just need all of them. And I thought that was interesting because
interesting way to look at it.
It is. And it could limit the rotation. You know, I think he admitted there is going to be a rotation, but it could limit it. If you get all that out of two players and they're better than the other two players, you're probably going to play them more.
Yeah, but he also did acknowledge the wear and tear that playing that position takes on players, and you know how the injuries at the running back position are probably league wide, you know, more than any other position. I mean, they just, and not just injuries, but just, you know, diminishing point of returns as players play more. So he seems to be aware of that. So we'll see how it balances out. I know a lot of people are just assuming a guy like Gainwell, who we both like, is going to come in and be a big factor right off the bat. You know, he's a rookie, late round pick, mid round pick, fifth round pick. So there's no guarantees with him, and there's no guarantees with Kerryon Johnson. So, you know, because he's coming off two bad years in a row and injury. So I don't think it'll necessarily be some giant five-man rotation or anything like that. I mean, that's impossible. Nobody does that. So, but it is interesting to hear. It was interesting because you think like some guys, one guy can do that, like all-time greats. Mm-hmm. You get that all out of one guy. But the NFL isn't like that anymore. I mean, everybody rotates. Everybody does it. So we'll see. We'll see how it works out. I still think it's going to be a three-man rotation. I'd be surprised if it's not, but we'll see how much that third man plays.
And we disagree a little bit on Gainwell. I think he's going to play a lot early. I think that position, you can plug him in right away.
I'm not saying he won't. I'm just saying you don't know about a young guy, a young fifth-round pick like that who's, you know, a rookie. You don't know. I think it wouldn't surprise me if he does play a lot. It wouldn't, if he has a big role, but I don't think it's a lock. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. I get that. I just think I'm playing him right away. I'm going to maximize my running.
Sure they want to. I'm sure they would love to. He can do a lot of things, and he's an intriguing player, but he's got to learn how to play NFL football too.
Thank you for calling it. You know, one of my biggest pet peeves is when coaches or players say the National Football League for emphasis. This is the National Football League.
As opposed to the...
Bugs Canadian, the hell out of me.
Canadian yeah. Football League.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Yeah. Let's just roll through some of the other position coaches and kind of more rapid fire here, because I think we hit the main topics, I think, from those guys. But there are other interesting takeaways. Brian Johnson, our first chance to talk to him. Look, they didn't hire him because of his history with Jalen Hurts. They hired him because, you know, he was a hot name. I mean, he wasn't going to be long for Florida anyway. But I think that history with Jalen Hurts helps, at least right now.
Yeah, it's a long history. And, I mean, a lot of these assistants have some weird connections. A bunch of them have weird connections with this team. I don't know how much of that was intentional, how much of that was just coincidence. But I was impressed with Brian Johnson, a guy I didn't know a lot about when he got here. And obviously we hadn't talked to him, but I thought he came across really well. And yeah, that background, I mean, every little bit helps with a young quarterback.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how Johnson fits in to the offensive coaching staff dynamic, because Sirianni, Steichen, and Petullo, who are kind of like the three main guys designing the offense, have all worked together before. They had this level of familiarity, and he's kind of the outsider. A lot of these coaches they hired had connections to the coaching staff. Johnson doesn't. So I'm interested to see how he's going to, he needs to fit in. And Petullo even talked about his knowledge of the college game and the RPO stuff, which they're going to need to have if they're going to design this offense around Jalen Hurts. So I'm curious to see how Johnson feels like his voice is being heard in a room where he is the new guy.
Well, one thing we've heard from Nick, I think every time we've spoken to him, is collaboration and listening to his assistants and involving them and, you know, hearing their voice. And whether a guy's a quality control guy or an intern or a coordinator, if somebody brings a good idea to the table, it'll get considered. So, I mean, I guess pretty much every coach says that. So, who knows how it'll really go, but I don't have any reason to believe that he doesn't feel that way. I mean, he seems like the kind of guy that's going to involve everyone and listen to everyone. But yeah, I mean, it is like the little, you know, San Diego, Indianapolis clique, you know, and he's not a part, clique's the wrong word, but he's not a part of that. But Sirianni seems to really have an ear for what all these guys are saying. So it wouldn't be a big concern of mine.
Yeah. And Johnson is someone who I would listen to. I think there's a reason he's in the position he's in at what, 34?
Yeah. I like the staff. I mean, every one of these guys came across, pretty almost every one of them came across as really bright, really engaged and honest, something we haven't always gotten around here. It's an interesting group. They're young, but I was impressed with almost all of them.
Jason Michael, tight ends coach, comes here actually from Indianapolis, where he was the tight ends coach. So kind of a rare lateral move. Didn't get a chance to ask him about that, but he has been in contact with Zach Ertz. I think that's important. It's still a long shot that he's on the roster, but good on Michael for at least making him feel welcome as much as he can.
Yeah, I thought he handled that really well. He said, yeah, I mean, he's on the roster. Of course, I've talked. I think he said he's talked to him more than once. I think he indicated it was multiple times. Mm-hmm. And said, you know, I would love to have him on the team, which, you know, it's a tricky thing when because what's going on with Zach Ertz and the Eagles is way above Jason Michael's pay grade. But he was honest about it. He said, yeah, I'd love to have him here. Who wouldn't want Zach Ertz? He's a really good player. Who wouldn't want him here? So I'm sure, knowing Zach Ertz, I'm sure he appreciates Jason Michael reaching out, and whether it makes a difference, I doubt it, but, it shows me a little something about him. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Zach Ertz, he's never met the guy. He doesn't know who he is.
And he's a veteran coach. I mean, he's, on a young staff. He's one of the, he's an older guy. He's in his 40s, but he is a little older. He has some more experience than some of these other guys.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. He, I thought he came across really well.
Yeah. Kevin Petullo, who is a passing game coordinator. He's a guy that I think we're going to forget about, but we shouldn't, because he's going to have a big role. I think he's kind of like Sirianni's right-hand man.
It seems that way. And he speaks that way. I mean, he, you know, he talked about how when they first got here and Nick was still putting together his staff and,
well, you remember on that first, when Clarkey was at the airport, you know, and they flew in, it was, he brought Petullo with him. Like they were a package deal.
Yeah. He was here right at the start. That's what I was getting. And he talked about how, you know, Nick was so busy, and I forget who asked the question. It was a good question. Just that whole first couple of weeks when Nick's trying to put the staff together and Kevin Petullo is already here. So Nick kept, you know, telling him like, I want you to do this, and this, cause I got to interview these guys and I got to, you know, reach out to these candidates. And, you know, he kept assigning me different tasks involving the offense. So right from the very beginning of the inception of the Nick Sirianni offense, Kevin Petullo was doing legwork, and he was, you know, he was putting that thing together. So very intimately involved, and he kept referring to, you know, I'm basically here for whatever Nick needs. I mean, if he goes off to do this, he'll task me with this. And it was interesting to hear him talk about. And you know, it's, again, it's like, it's not the traditional coaching lineup from the past of an offensive coordinator and then position coaches. I mean, I think it was a problem with Doug's staff. Everything, I think the roles were never really defined. There was too many of them. There was just guys, there was like five guys with these weird titles, you know, director of this and coordinator of that, and, you know, consultants and analysts, and it was just too many cooks spoiled the broth. But Kevin Petullo came across, I thought, like one of those guys that you look at and was like, this guy's going to be a head coach, you know?
Maybe, you know, him and Sirianni mentioned that they used to talk about like, hey, if one of us gets a job at some point, this is what we're going to do. So It feels like, not that they're both the head coach, obviously Sirianni's the man, but they had a plan for this moment before this, and a lot of that when Sirianni had his interview, I'm guessing is what he talked about.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if it's harder to get hired as a head coach. It's hard to get hired as a head coach from passing game coordinator, even if it's a really, you know, powerful position, important position in Nick Sirianni's hierarchy. I don't think it's a stepping stone to becoming a head coach. I think you need to be a coordinator. So, but even if it's
A stepping stone. It's not the last stepping stone.
Yeah. That's pedantic, but fair.
I'm nothing if not pedantic, but fair.
it was interesting. And all these guys really emphasized, and again, I said it before, but just the communication among them and just the openness and the ideas and the collaboration and, you know, whatever my title is, whatever his title is, it's all about, you know, ideas about offense, and they have some good offensive minds. And I think we're going to see the product of that on the field a little bit this year. I think we'll see the offense operating a lot more efficiently. I mean, there is some talent here on offense. If the O-line's healthy, I mean, I think they're potentially a 22, 23 points per game offense. I think that's realistic to hope for, that they're, you know, they can be a top 12, top 13 offense in the league.
Okay. We have a couple more coaches to get through. Tracy Rocker, defensive line coach. I think he's maybe Stout's older, but Tracy Rocker, the oldest new coach on the staff. I saw Les Bowen joke that it was nice to see a coach with gray hair after, you know, we had all these other young guys. But
Les Bowen, he is a laugh riot.
Tracy Rocker, I don't know what to expect from him. The Eagles have gone through, what, four defensive line coaches in 6 years?
Yeah, incredible college player. He was he's in the College Football Hall of Fame. Did not have a good. He was a really high pick. He was a high one. Didn't have a good career. He's been coaching a long time. His answers were kind of weird. we didn't really get a lot from him. He laughed a lot. He talked about his son, who's I guess a hotshot baseball prospect.
Yeah.
But as far as, I guess it's such a veteran group, that I guess having an older position coach might be, might make sense. Whereas, you know, I mean, the O-line is older and stout, the D-line's older and rocker, you know, secondary and wide receivers are younger and you have younger coaches. Maybe that's intentional. But I didn't get much of a sense of what kind of coach he is and, you know, but they've gone, like you said, they've gone through so many D-line coaches. So we'll see how it goes with them.
Yeah.
I would suggest, you know, maybe renting.
Yeah. The one big takeaway from Rocker was he was asked about, you know, what kind of style defensive line is this going to be? Because, you know, under Schwartz, it was a lot of wide nine. It was a lot of just get after the passer. And if the running back's there on your way, take him down. It seems like it's going to be a little different. He talked about situational football. That was kind of his retort, was like, we have to know the situation. If it's a situation that calls for more read react, we're going to do that. And that's different. That's going to be a little different for these guys. It's not going to just be pin your ears back, go 100 miles an hour all the time. And we'll see how it goes. I think there's a little more sense in that. It was fun to watch the defensive line get after it the last few years, but I think we're going to see a more varied front in several ways this year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that really is the case. I don't know. I don't know if it'll be a difference that we can discern. Maybe it will. There's so much talent on that D-line that it does make sense to kind of let them loose. And also, if your linebackers are playing better, then you can afford to kind of have them go full bore forward, because you have the faith that your linebackers are going to, you know, pick up the scraps. But we'll see how it plays out. I really don't know what to make of him and what to make of his coaching style. And, you know, I don't know. I feel like you could throw those guys out there, Fletcher and BG and Ryan Kerrigan and Barnett and Sweat and whoever else, and they don't even need a coach. They just go play.
Yeah. Nick Morales, linebackers coach, one of the biggest topics, and it's hard to avoid with him, he's 27. He's believed to be the youngest position coach in the NFL. He turns 28 soon, though. I came away really impressed by his confidence and just the way he presented himself, because I don't think I could have done that at 27.
Yeah. What were you doing when you were 27?
I was covering the Texans, or I was coming back here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And it was my last year before I started covering the Eagles. I was big on high school football at that point for the BCT, but I certainly couldn't have done what he did. And I liked his answers. He said, I'm a young coach, but for me, it's all about learning. I just trying to get better as a coach every day and learn as much as I can and help these guys get better. I mean, he was very, he didn't run from it. He didn't say it's irrelevant. I mean, he said, you know, he kind of said that it gives me more time to learn the position and to soak things in. And I don't know how it'll go. It's a risk. It's a risky move. He's got to earn these guys' respect. I mean, any coach does, but when you're 27 and you're so new at this, he's Alex Singleton's age. So
it'll help having Eric Wilson in his room, because it's, you know, he's probably one of the best linebackers on the team, and he's someone who already respects him, already knows him.
Yeah, I think that's big. It's going to be interesting to watch him. It's just like watch him at practice, at training camp. I think if he knows his stuff, and I really believe this, if you know your stuff and you know, you put in the work and you know, your age isn't going to matter. And these guys want to win. I think we talked about this last week. They won four games all last year. They want to win. And if a guy's going to come in here and help them do that and is serious about it, putting in the work, knows his stuff, dedicated to the job, growing as a coach, I think he'll earn their respect and they'll listen to him.
Yeah. That's all we have on the position coaches. Before we wrapped up, I did want to get in. I almost forgot about it, but the Eagles made a few roster moves on Wednesday, a couple of surprising ones. They waived Jamie Newman and Khalil Tate, and they waived Trevon Grimes with an injury designation. All three names, pretty big names. Tate was really an outside shot, former college quarterback. But what do you make of the other two, Newman and Grimes?
Well, Grimes was hurt, and I think I wouldn't be shocked if we see him again at some point. Yeah. But obviously, when you get to training camp, I mean, I would guess it's an injury that's going to go into training camp, and you can't have. I mean, you need legs. You need healthy legs, a wide receiver. So they brought in a wide receiver who, I mean, the earlier you do it, the better. Now they only have 90 spots, so it's like you can't just keep a guy like Trevon Grimes and hope that he gets better and take up a spot on your 90. So you need receivers, and you need to get a guy in here now so he can learn the offense. He didn't have OTA. He didn't have whatever they were. He's got to know the offense by July 27th. So it's a move you probably have to make, unless you want to put him on IR, which they don't want to do. So,
Well, Grimes, he's going to revert to IR.
Yeah, I guess if he doesn't get claimed, if he doesn't pass a physical somewhere else, I guess he would revert to IR.
Which means he's still around.
Yeah. Well, he would have to get treatment here too. I believe that's how it works, right?
Yeah.
Jamie Newman, I mean, there's no other quarterback, so they got to get a quarterback. It's a little surprising. He was the third quarterback. He's a weird deal. I mean, he hadn't played since, he didn't play last year at Georgia. He was okay at Wake. Big kid. But
he was intriguing. I thought people were, there was some excitement about him because he had some tools.
I think without knowing the case, without talking to anyone, because when we obviously this happened after we talked to the coaches, but when somebody's released that soon, it says, he wasn't what we thought in some way.
Yeah.
And he just wasn't what we thought. He's not what, they don't really need a third quarterback until camp starts, So if he's not going to be your guy, you may as well do it now.
Yeah. You got to find your quarterback. Like you mentioned, the receiver's got to – heck, the quarterback's got to know the offense.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think that. I mean, they've got to sign a quarterback unless they want to convert Greg Ward back or something.
Sign Khalil Tate as a quarterback.
Re-sign him?
Yeah,
cut him as a receiver, sign him as a quarterback. It's not going to be the easiest thing in the world finding a quarterback who can give you – who can learn the offense in the next 6 weeks and give you meaningful – snaps in training camp. So they've got to find themselves a quarterback.
Yeah. And Newman, when we looked at the contract details, that's why it didn't surprise me as much, because they didn't give him any guaranteed money, no signing bonus. And normally, look, I understand maybe there are some exceptions, but if you want to know what a team thinks about undrafted rookies, you follow the money. They pay the guys they care about.
What about this? What if they only needed him for the mini camps and the plan all along was to cut him and then bring him back for the summer? Like, so you have the extra roster spot between now and when camp starts. So you have him for the mini camps because you need the arm, you need a third arm. And since he didn't have since he didn't get a bonus, there's no dead money. It's not even $100 in dead money. So you can cut them and bring them back when you need them.
But they're going to need a quarterback for camp.
Yeah. So you have you have an extra guy in camp on the roster between now and then.
Why would you need that?
So they
always need an extra guy on a roster when they're not doing anything.
Well, because they can learn the offense. They can have a playbook. I'm spitballing here.
Yeah, I don't know if that makes much sense. To have, like, for a month to have a guy have a playbook.
Yeah.
Well, I like where you're going. I just don't think it makes any sense.
But it also doesn't make sense to whoever your third quarterback's going to be is a guy who hasn't been around a team until the start of camp also. So I'm trying to figure out.
I mean, I think the obvious answer here is they brought in Newman and they didn't think he was very good.
Right. I'm trying to reconcile the no bonus with the fact that he can come and go, but it's not a polished theory. It's just, I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah. This is a good time for theories.
Yeah. I mean, we'll say they need a quarterback and it's not an easy thing to find. I mean, there's every good quarterbacks are on rosters right now. So, you know, we'll see what they come up with.
You got anything else before we wrap?
You can go into the season with two quarterbacks. You can't go to training camp with two quarterbacks.
Yeah, you need especially with preseason games. You need someone to play. When we're in New York for that that final preseason game, you're going to need someone out there.
Hi, is Clayton there, please?
Clayton's busy. Clayton's on his NFC East tour. I think he's with the Giants now.
Yeah. Hey, Christian, are you still playing baseball?
Yeah. I don't know what they're going to do, but you're right. They have to add someone. You got anything else?
No.
All right. If you enjoyed the podcast, I don't know why you would, please go ahead, rate, subscribe wherever you get your pods. If you're watching on YouTube, click the like button, subscribe there as well. That's all we have. We'll be back with you guys next week. Hope everyone has a great weekend.